Have you got more debt than you can handle? Are you confused by all of the ads that promise to help you become debt-free? Who can you trust? I'm Doug Hoyes of Hoyes Michaelis, Licensed Insolvency Trustees. We've helped thousands of people just like you eliminate their debt. Many have posted reviews and testimonials about our people and our service. Check us out. Helping people deal with their debt is all that we do. No tricks, no gimmicks. We get the job done. Give us a call at 310-PLAN or visit Hoyes.com. That's Hoyes.com. And let's get started.
You are now listening to True Murder, the most shocking killers in true crime history, and the authors that have written about them. Gacy, Bundy, Dahmer, The Night Stalker, BTK. Every week, another fascinating author talking about the most shocking and infamous killers in true crime history. True Murder, with your host, journalist and author, Dan Zupansky.
Good evening. Serial slaughter is the story of the infamous Zodiac Killer. The killer roamed California, especially Northern California, for decades. He announced himself with dramatic flair corresponding with law enforcement and the media in order to gain the attention he craved. This is the Zodiac speaking, and this is the murder of the two teenagers last Christmas at Lake Herman and the girl on the 4th of July, making sure they knew his kills, connecting the dots for them. Fading away as promised in 1969, he continued to kill and ceased to help those who would hunt him. Details now included are new. The crimes are looked at, thoroughly researched, investigated, and written about with a new perspective. Great new finds of information at last to add to the story. The cases of murdered women and girls are brought back to the surface as the author works to bring attention once again to their cases. The book that we're featuring this evening is Serial Slaughter, Zodiac Killer, with my special guest, journalist and author, Ann Penn. Welcome to the program, and thank you for this interview, Ann Penn.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. An incredible story and incredible timing for this, especially in light of just the recent post on Facebook regarding a certain Gary Post and the claim that the Zodiac was finally named. Let's talk about how you first became involved with this, why you wanted to tell this story, and what this story is really about.
Well, it's just further research, deeper dive into what is out there to be found about this particular killer. There's just so many murders in the state of California. Being a California native, it's important to solve cold cases.
You say that you have to go back to the beginning. You say there was more than one serial killer roaming California in the 60s and the 70s. And you want to answer the question, what happened to the Zodiac Killer? And you say, in reality, what could be true about what happened? So that was your goal, and that's your intent of this book. You say that in 1969, that there was more than what happened with the Zodiac after 69. People say he walked away, and you say he just walked away from aspects of the Zodiac persona.
Correct. He continued to kill, just like he said he would. And he didn't go too far away to do it. He's different than many a serial killer when it comes to how he drove into areas and committed crimes and drove out. And that's what he did as Zodiac, as we know. Anybody that's familiar with the story, each kill was usually during a weekend or a holiday. And he would just decide that he was going to do this particular kill after he'd stalked someone, most likely, and drive off. And that's what he did. Over and over. And it was almost like a testing ground for him for that one year.
Yes, you say that he said, I shall no longer announce to anyone when I commit my murders, they shall look like routine robberies, killings of anger, and a few fake accidents, etc. Early in this book, you talk about some of the evidence that you've unearthed in terms of, you say that the Zodiac was an avid reader and would read newspapers. Tell us what you found and your theory about articles and him reading articles and then his list.
Right. Well, what it looks like in researching in depth is that one of the things we know that he did was like to get media attention, law enforcement, and he liked to have not only his information posted in the newspapers, but he wanted to see what he could find out about his crimes and what they said about him. And, you know, he was a media hog. And so what he did, he was absolutely addicted, in my opinion, to reading the newspaper. And when I researched further into different people who were murdered over time from 1969 moving forward, what it looks like happened from the research was that if someone was on his list, like, for example, there's a Leona Roberts who was murdered, and she had had her announcement in the newspaper for getting married. And it looks really suspicious that here a few months later, she's murdered. And this was in December of 1969. And so there were lots of different things that happened over time where there were murders decade after decade, where if you look back and you go, okay, what happened prior to this person being murdered? Were they in the newspaper a lot? Did they get a lot of attention? What is the connection? And so that's what I went after in many, many of these murders that happened over time in different areas. And a lot of those are around the Sacramento area. And interestingly enough, it appears that there were a lot of times where law enforcement would talk amongst themselves and even mention it in the newspaper that maybe these murders were the Zodiac in Sacramento.
Right. You talk about these crimes in California, and you talk about the crime wave that was happening in the 60s and 70s regarding rape and murder. You say that there was a lot of rapes and murders, but there was a lot of similarities in a lot of the rapes and murders that were never solved. Can you chronicle them?
Well, what it shows is there was a serial killer. There was more than one, of course. There were several, actually, during the 80s in particular. But there were others out there killing people and picking up hitchhikers and dumping bodies and so on. But what the pattern around Sacramento looked like was that there were murder after murder where women were picked up and dumped right across the county line from Sacramento County into Sutter County, for example. There were so many of them that were picked up in the North Highlands area and driven right across into less than a mile and dumped in that same area. And this also went on decade after decade. And there were just so many of them. It's amazing to me that a task force wasn't put together in a very serious way to figure out who was doing this, because what it appeared was not only did the detectives talk about what it might be and that eventually Donna Lass might be connected to the Hikari murder and to the Benelec murder and so on. They would talk about it and then nothing would come of it. They just wandered off and didn't talk about it anymore in the news.
You talk about the descriptions of Zodiac as well. What did your investigation unearth about the conflicting descriptions?
Well, you know, composites are pretty awful. You can't really tell, but back in the 1960s, I have a chapter about just composites. Every guy in the world looked just like Zodiac with their glasses and their crew-cut hair and so on, and it's really kind of funny. But some of the descriptions that came about from some of the victims, actually, were pretty close to composites that were drawn later on by about another serial killer, and they were pretty close. And these are, again, from the victims like Mike Mezhu and then also from Cecilia Shepherd. But one of the things that Mike talked about or identified as the perpetrator eventually was Arthur. And what's interesting about the way Arthur looked at the time, and I have pictures of what he looked like, is how similar he looked to another serial killer that we know of and that he identified. But then also we know that the witnesses to the Paul Stein murder didn't think he looked like Arthur at all. And they said, no, that's not him. But Robert Graysmith did not interview them because that would have changed his story and his narrative. So it's all interesting how it all sort of crisscrossed.
You talk about this Paul Stein being very important murder, and also that Robert Graysmith fictionalized one aspect of it, at least in terms of that it was a foggy, misty night, which would prevent or inhibit witnesses from getting a good look at the perpetrator. But you say that, in fact, that maybe police should have relied on those descriptions more so.
Oh, yeah.
Can you explain?
What's interesting about the composite that came from the actual witnesses of the Stein murder is that they saw him in really good light. It wasn't foggy or misty, and it was right below their window, really, and there was a lot of light. He had the door open to the cab. But what's interesting about who they saw was originally they described him as the younger version of himself. I think it was 28 to 30 or 25 to 30. And later on, when the police put out posters and composites, they ended up revising that and making him older, somewhere more around 45. And that was their narrative. And I didn't understand why that was so, because the actual witnesses saw him and he was the younger version that would be about the right age. He was probably around 24 at the time.
Right.
The guy with the that they just tried to identify a week or so ago, and everybody's like, oh, look, he has the same lines in his forehead as the composite. So what? You know? So.
Yeah, let's just briefly touch on that, not to give it too much credence, but for those people that didn't see the follow-up story, that has it looked like it had some potential because of the headlines, but in reality,
right,
there's not much to this at all, to the Gary
part. I had people contact me and ask me, hey, what's the story? And I said, it's not him. It's not real. And a few days later, the FBI came along, and there's an article in the paper that said that they did not give any credence to that ID either. And the thing that, you know, immediately stood out to me, well, there were a couple things. One was the discussion about Sherry Jo Bates, and the Zodiac did not kill Sherry Jo Bates. And if you note in the articles, the Riverside PD didn't even talk to these guys. It appears it sounded like they really didn't want to discuss that case. And of course, they didn't want to use DNA to test and so on. And the reason is because Riverside already has a full profile of Sherry Jo Bates' killer. They've had it for years and years. They fed it into CODIS. It's not him. It's not the Zodiac. It's a completely different killer. The story just took on a life of its own, and it's remained there all these years. So that's the first thing that was wrong with the story that came out with these guys that said they ID'd him. They don't even realize that Sherry Jo Bates was not killed by Zodiac. And the second thing had to do with the story about Donna Last hanging from a tree and trying to find her in the forest. That just seems too far-fetched to me, because I've actually talked to the detective up here in the Tahoe. I say up here in the mountains in the Tahoe area. I've spoken to him and made him pull out all the files and all the microfilm. And unfortunately, a lot of these files are so old. They mentioned that the birds got into the files or something happened to them, and they had to pull reports for microfiche for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is not like what they tell.
Let's get to your idea of what happened to the Zodiac after 1969, after supposedly police and the media believed that he had walked away, but he had made this promise. So how did authorities approach that promise, and what did you find in terms of what you believe the Zodiac did after saying that he was going to walk away?
Well, he told them exactly what he was going to do. He told them every step of the way what he was doing and what he was going to do. And I believe every word of what he said. He said he was going to walk off and not tell them, not connect for them the murders. And what he also said was he was going to make them look like accidents. He was going to, use knives and whatever. He had a different menagerie of things he was going to use to kill and not tell them about it. And that's exactly what he did, because he knew that if he went across jurisdictional lines and if he killed people by bludgeon, by knife, by shooting them, he changed up his MO across time and space, that chances were pretty slim that they would figure out who he was. And that's exactly what he did. It was like he drew him a map and said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. And it even says in some of the hidden messages that we have discovered in the letters that he sent, there are hidden messages that all the misspelled words actually spell out hidden messages, and they are about some of the things he said. Like, for example, wig I like. He likes wigs. He liked wigs. He used disguises, and he did anything he felt like. And so that's what you see moving forward, that's what he continued to do. He wasn't kidding. He continued to kill.
In your investigation, you looked at all kinds of rapes and murders, abductions, attempted abductions. What was the MO, the victimology, and more importantly, just the thing that you felt signified that this was a Zodiac continuing to perpetrate?
Well, he mostly killed women, and that was his thing. He killed couples. He continued to do that in different ways, by bludgeon, by shooting them. There are different murders that you can tell they have to be him. He just continued. And one of the threats he did make was that he was going to pick off kiddies coming off buses. Well, he never blew anyone up. But what he did do was make people vanish into thin air. For example, kids getting off the bus, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 12-year-olds, you name it. I mean, he had a menagerie of you know, younger girls, and then he also killed women. But with the ones that he took after school off the bus or going to the bus in the morning, they were there 1 second and gone the next. And most of the time, no one saw anything. He was like a phantom. But their bodies would turn up, and a lot of times in the same jurisdictions, you know, he liked to dump them where fishermen would find them. And it just continued on and on. And what's interesting moving forward, too, is that the famous Paul Avery ended up in Sacramento doing crime writing for the Sacramento Bee.
Right.
And he ended up running across the case, the first case, actually, right after he was hired, within 3 days after he was hired, he got involved with the murder of Catherine Harlan. She was 9 years old, disappeared from the bus. And also they decided after a while to charge him with abducting someone called Catherine Hagenbush. And eventually those charges were dropped against this guy who had an IQ of about 63 named Fred. But Paul Avey was very instrumental in that case. He wrote a huge story about it, the biggest story that the Sacramento Bee had ever had about a crime. It was almost like they tried to say he was trying the case in the paper. But
right.
So what he said ended up being absolutely true. And he was investigating, how in that world did you, you know, arrest a guy with a 63 IQ for these murders? They're too complex. So long story short, he was there in Sacramento writing about the crimes around Sacramento and all the murders. He had to know something was going on down there.
You talk about the Zodiac contacting law enforcement and media.
Mm-hmm.
After this, obviously, he said he wasn't going to communicate with the media. But it's interesting that he would not crave that kind of attention. And you say that there are crimes.
Did.
You're saying that he moved on to a different type of taunting.
Right, exactly. He changed who he contacted. He stopped calling the media for the most part. What he did instead was he wrote letters to crime beats and said, did you guys solve this? And they would write in the paper, Crime Watches, that no, it hasn't been solved. It's an open case and so on. The other thing that he did was call people, but what he did was call the victims. He called the victims and the victims' families. There are murders where he calls and calls and says, you know, they're like, do you know where she is? And he just laughs and hangs up, you know, like I killed her and things like that. Just really obnoxious, rotten things that he would do to the families and the victims themselves. So he found a way to hack people.
Mm. You talk about the progression in some of his behavior, when he started off. Let's talk about how you connect some of these crimes to another serial killer.
Well, what do they say about coincidences? There's too many to be coincidences. Too many things that are the same. You know, there was a serial killer in Sacramento for 40 years, basically, and surrounding areas. And admittedly, some of the crimes that I have investigated were so exacting, so absolutely the same with bludgeoning, knocking somebody's teeth out, bashing their faces and their heads in, different things that were done were so exactly the same as far as his crimes, you know, what he found he liked to do the best, etc. But also some of the things he said over time about how he had to get to Mexico, different things that he said to the victims themselves. There are people who actually survived and could tell you what was said. I spoke to Brian Hartnell at one point. I've spoken to different other people that were involved in the story. And it's interesting how similar this serial killer was the one that morphed into what he became later on. So
when you talk about the Zodiac, over the years, there have been a number of suspects that have surfaced. And in this book, you go through those and you ask the question, or you tell why that they were a suspect in the first place and then why it was dismissed. Can you talk about a couple of those more primary suspects and what might have looked good to some people and why they were dismissed?
Yeah, well, a lot of people realize over time why most of the suspects of the Zodiac Killer, of being the Zodiac Killer, were dismissed, because there really was no real evidence and there's no fingerprints, there's no, you know, DNA, there's nothing to actually connect someone to the Zodiac. The profiles that they have are partial profiles at best. A criminalist on a show that I was watching was basically going through that and saying why it's not really useful. Meanwhile, in 2018, I think it was Vallejo PD, announced they were going to do retesting, and we should have some results soon. And here it is 3 years later, and you haven't heard a word from them, because they really don't have any usable DNA, in my opinion. And they don't have any fingerprints that tie anyone to the crimes of, you know, the Zodiac when he killed Paul Stein. People like to argue about the fingerprints left on the cab, if there's any usable anything. The only thing I would test for, if I were to be the one to do it, would be to see if the shirt that he ripped in the cab has any touch DNA or anything. But everything is just so degraded after 50 some odd years that it's probably not going to be usable. And that's what they say.
You talk about Arthur Lee Allen and why he was included. Obviously, there's the movie, I believe, 2007, I believe, or 2000. Anyway, the movie Zodiac.
Yeah.
Why is Arthur Allen Lee not a viable suspect?
Well, they cleared him with DNA eventually before he died, I believe, or was it right after? But basically, the DNA that they have, they were able to figure out that it wasn't him, whatever profile they have, their partial profile. And also, he is a pedophile only, really, it seems. The Zodiac would continue on, and he didn't seem to discriminate between children, 9-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 15-year-olds, and then women that were 28, 30. Didn't seem to matter the age of the victim. It was just the ease of taking them and bludgeoning them to death or shooting them or whatever he felt like.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of instances later on, too, where people just vanished from their homes, vanished into thin air.
What about other suspects like Ross Sullivan?
Well, he had mental health issues. But, you know, one of the things about the serial killer is that he was organized. He was methodical. I think he had OCD in that he kept track of everything he did. I don't think some of the people with mental health issues that were brought forward as suspects really could do, you know, what he did and sustain it, you know. So Ross Sullivan, to me, just was not a viable suspect. And a lot of people feel that way about him. Even if his name isn't any kind of cipher, or if it isn't, he's really not a viable suspect, in my opinion.
And were there any other suspects that you dealt with in your book and dismissed, ruled out?
Well, one of the ones, I figure out how to pronounce his name. It's Mr. Vell, Q Vell. He was in Mike Rodelli, book. And I found that fascinating, more fascinating than most, actually. And it's really the only book that I've looked at. But he thought that it was him, and I can see why in a particular way, because he was an older gentleman, and he lived in the Presidio. But I don't believe it's him either. Yeah, for many reasons. But anyway, and it was a fascinating read because of the fact that his suspect was an older gentleman. He was old enough to have been in World War II, but he actually knew that they were looking at him while he was still alive as a suspect for the Zodiac, and he sort of sat across the table from the author and an investigator and, you know, went through it and said, well, why do you think I'm a suspect? So, but I don't, you know, I believe what I believe for many, many reasons, and the circumstantial evidence that I've collected makes more logical sense to me. And also, Mr. Chauvel was too old to be Zodiac, in my opinion.
Yeah. Before we talk about who you really believe the Zodiac killer morphed into, let's talk about Richard Marshall and why he was suspected, because this is a very interesting suspect. And just coincidence.
A coincidence? That one I'm not as familiar with off the top of my head, because there's so many details and so many different suspects. I just brought forth the first 5 or 6 different suspects over time that were possibilities. But there were ones that were, one in particular that really kind of caught my attention. And I thought, well, why would anybody think Ted Kaczynski was a Zodiac killer? But it was because he threatened to blow up people. But his manifest was way different in what his causes were than what the Zodiac. The Zodiac did this just for fun, just because he wanted to and because he could. So, and as far as you said, Richard Marshall, so you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, Richard Marshall was the Well, what he was just a projectionist, but what I thought was very interesting is that he became a suspect, it looks like, because he liked these old movies, including The Red Phantom, which was mentioned in a 1974 Zodiac letter.
It was kind of interesting, the circumstantial evidence that they brought forward, because he was in Riverside in 1966, and he was near where Stein was murdered and things like that. So I can see why they took a look at him. And also the Red Phantom. He's just kind of a weird guy. So, and he had a typewriter and a teletype similar to what the Zodiac was using apparently at the time. So
very interesting.
They ruled him out though. Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting with their suspects. Especially back in before the DNA.
Were these suspects suspects of the police, or were they suspects for people online? Because this is garnered so much attention over the years.
Well, these were, you know, originally people they looked at in the beginning. Different people brought other people forward, like in the case of Arthur Allen. You know, somebody else said, well, look at this guy. He's been in trouble for this, or he's done this or that. And so other people were usually instrumental in bringing a suspect forward.
Right. Let's use this as an opportunity to stop for a second for these messages.
Have you got more debt than you can handle? Are you confused by all of the ads that promise to help you become debt-free? Who can you trust? I'm Doug Hoyes of Hoyes Michaelis, Licensed Insolvency Trustees. We've helped thousands of people just like you eliminate their debt. Many have posted reviews and testimonials about our people and our service. Check us out. Helping people deal with their debt is all that we do. No tricks, no gimmicks. We get the job done. Give us a call at 310-PLAN or visit Hoyes.com. That's Hoyes.com. And let's get started.
Now what we were talking about is you have put together an analysis of the crimes of Zodiac, and then what happened afterwards, and the crimes that you attributed to the Zodiac. But again, you believe that there's another serial killer that he morphed into. So before we name that person, give us some more information on the similarities that struck you as more than coincidence, and then your analysis and research and further investigation have made you, as you write in the book, 110% sure of your conclusions.
Right. Well, like I said, when you study serial killers and the murders that happen in the Sacramento area in particular over time, and then also around the surrounding areas, the geography is really close. Vallejo is not far from Sacramento. Everything around the area in San Francisco is not very far. It's just really close by. And so I kind of did an analysis of each one of the murders at the beginning with Zodiac, just a little bit of information at the beginning. And then I talk about all the different murders that happened. Quite a few of them are in here from the 70s to 60s. And what kept happening over time was that people were killed in various ways, and they were dumped across jurisdictional lines instead of killing in a jurisdiction and then moving to another jurisdiction and killing. What he was doing was killing in a particular county and then dumping bodies in another county. Or he would move from, you know, again, county to county, different jurisdictional lines, very aware of what he was doing, and would attack a lot of times in the same exact ways. Sometimes he would sexually assault people, and sometimes he wouldn't. Sometimes the mood was, I'm going to go kill somebody. Some of the dates are the same. He really, really, really seemed to like over and over to kill on Labor Day weekend. September 6th was a date that occurred over and over again. And the disappearance of Donna Lass was September 6th, 1970. And this is a date that comes up over and over again. So the anniversaries of dates that he liked to kill was a consistent over time. The fact that Donna Lass was taken after work, the way that I see it, and I talked to the detective about it, I said, you know, he was looking at, well, gee, back in 1970, this is new information, by the way, is that a lot of people thought that she didn't finish her call log that night, that she was taken maybe from the casino. She wasn't. She finished her call log. I have that in my possession. They thought possibly that she had been taken right out of work. They weren't sure if she was taken in California or Nevada, but when we look at the Nevada records of the crime, it appears that she was taken from there and then vanished. But what's interesting is that her car was parked in the parking lot of her apartment. And this happened also, by the way, over and over again, over time. In every single jurisdiction, there are murders of women where their car is parked where it was supposed to be, but they're gone. They're absolutely vanished. There's a lot of murders that happen where people were taken, like, for example, in Granite Bay, California, where the women are taken and they're found dead in their cars. So, you know, again, he changed up what he was doing to try to confuse people over jurisdictional lines over and over. He killed by bludgeon, by knife, by gun, by strangle, you name it. And the other thing that he did over and over was try to set other people up for what he had done. There are examples of people who got put away because of circumstantial evidence, and I'm sure he thought it was extremely funny. Mm-hmm. The other thing he did was attack in areas where he had particular grudges with people. If people had been in the news a lot, for example, a police person was in the news, a police officer, maybe he would make their family member go missing or something like that would happen. So there's just, I've tracked it really well, and I think I've explained it pretty well in this book, how he operated.
Why is it you believe that he was able to operate undetected, that some of the things that you looked at, some of the things that seem eerily similar, especially in light of the last few years, as you write about forensic technology and DNA advances, why didn't they see some of the things that you're seeing? Why was your particular perspective more crucial?
Well, I think that what's interesting is this is such a huge story. Let's go back and say, gee, first year Zodiac that we knew of him, that we actually formally knew of him from 1968 to 69, he contacted the media. He showed them how he was going to do this. He killed couples. And then he killed Paul Stein, who was the outlier. And then what happens is, he says, I'm not going to do it like this anymore, because he knew he had to move on, because if he continued doing what he was doing, sooner or later, they're going to figure out what he was doing. Well, as he continued on later on, if they had looked at him as thoroughly as they maybe could have, because there were so many murders in Sacramento and the surrounding areas. I mean, it's insane. That's why it's named serial slaughter, because there are so many dead bodies showing up. I'm sure that they must have been overwhelmed in every jurisdiction. Sometimes people in Sutter County would be taken to the morgue there and to the medical examiner there, or they'd switch them back and forth to Sac County, and just all kinds of different things were going on. But a lot of times it seems as though they had so many murders that they either were so overwhelmed that they didn't really, a case would go cold and then they'd go to the next one and so on. They just didn't either have the manpower or I don't know what to continue through to find this guy, because if a task force had been put together, like what they did with Ted Bundy, for example, where they worked together and they said, we're going to figure out who the heck this guy is. And of course, he was kind of stupid when it came to Ted Bundy, was kind of a little bit more careless as he went on in time.
Sure.
He ended up, you know, being a lot more careless and he got himself caught. But this guy, the Zodiac, he was meticulous. And he knew exactly what to do and what not to do to call attention to himself. And he threw a lot of confusion into every murder that he did. There's a couple murders in Sacramento in 1978 and 1980, respectively, where the women who were killed were right near a Greenbelt area. They were in the Eastbury rapist attack zones, and they were killed. You know, one of them jumped off of a balcony, and he got hurt somewhere along the way. So they have DNA. They have... In some of these murders, they still have DNA if they've kept it in evidence and if it's still viable, to be able to test to see who in the heck killed these women for real. And some people were put away for these murders, I think probably because law enforcement wanted to solve some of these crimes. They wanted to appease the public and tell them, hey, these are solved. It makes people feel a little less uneasy. But the sheer volume of murders was insane. And Sacramento has some of the highest murders in the country, to tell you the truth. And they did then, and they do now. So he had to live somewhere, and he's not dead. He didn't get incarcerated. You know, he was still out there.
Let's use this as an opportunity to stop to hear from our sponsor, which is Ritual. Gaps in the diet shouldn't be ignored. Over 97% of women aged 19 to 50 are not getting enough vitamin D from their diet, and 95% are not getting their recommended daily intake of key omega-3s. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin was formulated by exhaustive research to help fill nutrient gaps in the diets of women ages 18 plus. It is formulated with nutrients to help support brain health, bone health, blood health, and provide antioxidant support. But Ritual didn't stop there. They invested in a gold standard university-led clinical trial to prove the impact of Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin. The results? Essential for Women 18 Plus was shown to increase vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in 12 weeks. My wife Lisa started taking Rituals Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin over 2.5 years ago, and she has been impressed with how taking the multivitamin, Ritual Multivitamin, has made her feel. And so I decided to take Ritual Essential for Men 50 Plus when it became available. It's been almost a year now, and I am convinced Ritual has made a significant difference in how I feel every day. Right now, Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/murder and turn healthy habits into a ritual. That's 10% off at ritual.com/murder. Now, and we were talking about all of the information that led you to believe that you were looking at another serial killer, and that serial killer was Joseph DeAngelo, the former East Area rapist, original night stalker. As we found out in 2018, the Visalia ransacker. So tell us how you came to this conclusion. Tell us more about this conclusion.
Well, like I said, reading the news of what was going on in detail, and I have included a lot of the detail in this book about the different murders that were occurring. But one in particular really struck me, and if I can, I'd like to read a little excerpt from this.
Yes,
it has to do with Judith Hikari. Her body.
Right.
Says it was reported that she died from a combination of strangulation and a savage beating about the face. Her nose had been smashed to a pulp. Her jaw had been broken in at least two places. Several teeth had been knocked out. The hyoid bone at the base of her tongue had been fractured, probably by the stalking garrote. She had been sexually attacked. She was the victim of one of the most god-awful assaults I've ever investigated, said Chief Deputy Coroner Captain E.R. Presley. And then what I flash forward to, this was in 1970-71, flash forward to 1986, and if you read the murder of Janelle Cruz in Irvine, California, it was also brutal. I said it sounds so much like the murder of Miss Hikari that one could place the story one over the other as if to trace them. They're connected by the same perpetrator, although it was 16 years later. Janelle was beaten in the face and head. The perpetrator demolished her face, knocked out her teeth, which were found around the room and in Miss Cruz. She was so brutally murdered, the dental records had to be obtained in order to make sure it was in fact Janelle. And the difference is just in location in the murders, but the way that he was so brutal, the absolute horror of his rage was the same.
What else? I mean, obviously, when you see that, that it's the same crime.
Mm-hmm.
You have the same MO. But what are the things that you see as a progression? Like we mentioned that at first he obviously famously reached out to the Sacramento Bee and to law enforcement. But then after, it's less known because we have this movie where that goes on, but less known about the taunting and the significance of the anniversaries of something happening and him calling and tormenting, which is far more horrifying than contacting the media or law enforcement, certainly.
Right. And there are cases where he called the families that I point out in the book, where he would call the victim's family. The girl would be missing and he would call them every week. On a Wednesday, for example, he called every single week and asked for her, just taunting the victims and the victim's families over and over again. That was one of the ways he got his kicks. I mean, this guy used to call people on the phone and try to get together with them to, you know, if their pet was missing, there was an ad in the paper. He found a way to hassle people on the phone over and over again and in many, many different ways. And that never stopped. He was still doing stuff by the time they arrested him. He wore a wig. There's a picture of him with a wig on where he was on somebody's porch. I mean, there's just so many things that he did that were so much the same. And the conversation that Brian Hartnell had with him that day at Lake Berryessa, he heard his voice. And a lot of people have heard his voice. I know that some of the things he said to Brian that day, he repeated over and over. The things that he took and didn't take for years were the same. Keys and, you know, different other things like miscellaneous jewelry, one earring. It was the same. So some of the things he took from the cab the day that he killed Paul Stein, you know, he was just very meticulous and he had to have kept some sort of record to keep everyone straight and call them up on the anniversary of somebody's death or somebody's rape. he did this over and over again.
You realize that as a police officer, he knew quite a bit about jurisdictions and how the police worked and how the failings of police, because he was a police officer for a few years. How much was that a light bulb up top of your head when you realized that that made a lot of sense and answered a lot of questions?
Well, a lot of people thought that he was military and or, you know, a police person. And the ballistics involved way early on would have told anyone that he was a cop or that he had access to the ammunition that they used. Only them. They knew early on that it had to be somebody who had access to that. So there were just many clues that tell you that, you know, he had particular type of ammunition he liked or different things that he used. He never used a 44. He, you know, very rarely used anything larger than a 38. So just different guns that he stole over time and different things. He was a very good cat burglar. He was probably one of the most brilliant serial killers I've ever tracked.
Yeah. But it would be particularly helpful to be a police officer and also intimate. Like you say, he's in these small towns. They're very small, like Auburn and Grass Valley. So he has the opportunity to be able to know people or know people related to these people that end up being his victims. But being a police officer is particularly helpful, wasn't it?
And you're right. He had connections to people in Grass Valley and Newcastle and different places that are small towns all around the Auburn area where he was as a teenager. He ended up back there as an adult, as a police officer there. Some of the murders, I think, personally, that he did to keep Nick Willett busy in Auburn. He had a bone to pick with him because he was fired from the Auburn Police Department. And you find murders that are connected. You find media people that are from that area who came from San Francisco, who ended up owning the Plaster Herald, for example. There's just some interesting stories and connections to all of these people. And if he wanted to kill, let's say he killed Paul Stein because he was pissed off at somebody in the Stein family, or he killed Mary Lloyd in Auburn because he was pissed off at her brother, who owned the Plaster Herald, and had come from San Francisco. There's just so many connections because this man was out there, and he was drawing a little map of what he wanted to do. And he really did write down things, and he did have lists. And if he put you on a list to kill you, sometimes he would do it rapidly within a few months. And sometimes, in my book, there's a couple of people where it was 5 years later. But the news articles show what happened to these people. Were they in the news prior to these murders? And most often, 99% of the time, they were in the news. One of the murders of Jean Kimball, her son was in the news constantly as a Roseville Police Department official. And somehow his wife gets, his mother gets killed. So it's interesting the way he drew his connections to play his games. And that was one of the things he did that was also consistent. He played games as the Zodiac. He played games as the Golden State Killer, as the East Area Rapist, just loved to screw with them.
You write about what almost can be considered a close call. When you mentioned to the police chief that he was mad at because he was fired, tell us what you write about in the book about what almost happened in this regard with the police chief and his anger towards him.
Well, as the story most people know about D'Angelo was that when he was a police officer, he was arrested in the attack zones of the East Area Rapist in 1979, and he ended up being ultimately fired from being a police officer at that point. But he was never investigated in depth at that point. They just kind of let him wander off. He paid his fines and whatever needed to be done, but he went after Nick Willick a little bit. He threatened him, really, and then he showed up a few months later, is the story. That's what was told, that he stalked him and actually ended up outside of his house. So there was definitely bad blood between Nick Willick and Joseph D'Angelo. Joseph D'Angelo had actually even said, Nick Willick doesn't like me, and he didn't. There had been quite a few complaints about how he got too close to people when he was working and just different things that they didn't like about how he handled things. So there was bad blood between them, and interestingly enough, there were bodies that showed up around the Auburn area. I'm sure there's still some in Forest Hill. So he dumped a body across the street practically from the Auburn PD, and he kept him kept him busy. So there's stories about that, what went on in Auburn after the Zodiac left in 1969 in the Bay Area.
I found it very interesting when you talk about, and there has been talk about early on about abuse to dogs. And then you have this, you write about that a homemade dog repellent would be garlic, onions, a couple other things, soap, one of those things. But you report that there was people that said the Zodiac and the East Area Rapist both had the smell of rotting onions.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting how far your investigation went.
Yeah, and I also speculate, I kind of went through the Paul Stein murder where it said some people thought that he had stayed in the park, or if he didn't stay in the park, I talk about how he left the park. But when in the Presidio, when he, you know, he wrote a letter after the fact about what he had done, and he said, all you had to do was sit and wait for me to come out. And so I talk about both scenarios, whether he sat in the park and what he might have done to avoid detection, which is to have lots of dog repellent and hide in a particular place. He really did have some of the same MO as the later East Area Rapist when it came to watching people scurry around and try to figure out what happened and where he went. So,
and you say what's really important, too, because this is somewhat rare, is that they both targeted couples, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. D'Angelo admitted to killing the Maggiore couple, Brian and Katie Maggiore, in 1978. And what he basically did was kill them in cold blood. He ran after them and shot them. Both of them died that night. And I think he stalked them ahead of time. There's connections to Katie having been at Fresno State. Sharon Huddle was at Fresno State. Look, you can see the connections that he could have found someone in one place and known that they were in his face when they ended up in Sacramento. So he tracked people. He was a great stalker. He just was meticulous and he never gave up. If he wanted to go after you, he would go after you. If he wanted you to be a victim, he would be his victim. And Paul Stein, for example, I think that he wanted to kill Paul Stein. It just happened to be that he was a cabbie, made it easy for him to do it. And I think that even if Paul wasn't out there, he was supposed to have been hired by a San Francisco newspaper and was about to change jobs. I think that if he had not been in the cab that night, that D'Angelo would have tracked him and killed him anyway, somewhere else. I say D'Angelo, but that means equals Zodiac. I think he was stalking him. I think he was going to kill him.
Yeah. Is the idea of craving for celebrity make sense to you in terms of the Zodiac crave that celebrity and then said, I'm going away, but this, what he morphed into, again, craved that notoriety?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he wanted to be known, and he was. Like I said, he found different ways to satisfy his being able to be known. I mean, his sheer volume of attacks, no matter where he was, if he was the Visalia ransacker, if he was the East Area Rapist, no matter what he was doing, the sheer volume of it was how he terrorized everyone so much. And that was what he got off on, the power and control there.
Mm-hmm. Many people have looked at this geographical profile, geographical profiling, and you write that there was three main places that connected Zodiac and the Golden State Killer, Joseph D'Angelo, was Tulare County, Sacramento, and Garden Grove.
Right. You know, there were so many murders of women in Garden Grove, which is where his brother lived. There were so many murders, really, in the Auburn area and up and down Highway 80, and then also Sacramento County. So it's really close geographically. All of it is. So it was not a far stretch to look at what happened when Zodiac left and where he could have gone, what he was doing. It's really not.
You also, you talk about the similarities in, again, obviously geography, but also the MO as well in terms of these murders. But tell us about the ones that you think are the most, I guess, controversial that you've uncovered in this, and you offer the proof that they're one and the same.
Well, one of the things is that his home base really was around Sacramento for a very, very long time, for a lifetime. And what happened is that he loved to drive. He originally wanted to be a California Highway Patrol, and that didn't work out. So it's probably smarter for him to be just a police officer so that he could come and go and not be tracked quite as easily. But he was you know, in and around the areas up and down the highways. He knew the areas very intimately, and he just repeated what he was doing over and over, but he changed it up enough and threw enough confusion into the narrative always that somehow they seemed to not connect it. What was really fascinating to me was reading about the crimes, the murders in Sacramento, and the discussions that law enforcement had amongst themselves about maybe the Visalia ransackers, the East Area rapists. Nope, they let that go. Maybe the Zodiac is, you know, here in Sacramento and he's killing these women in Sacramento. Nope, never mind. So I'm not being critical really of law enforcement. I know they had their hands full, incredibly full, with all the murders. But, you know, it's sort of like, why didn't anyone pursue it more? Why was this guy allowed? If he killed five people the very first year and he tried to kill seven that we know of,
right.
then he killed in 50 years, he killed five a year. It's over 200 people. And that's the worst serial killer I've ever heard of. But it shows in the records, you know, there's so many crimes out there that were committed that they do have DNA. They should have DNA. They should be testing them. And as far as I can tell, some of the jurisdictions are, but they are very silent and they are not telling anyone anything about what they're doing. And my opinion is they might want to wait until there's nobody to prosecute anymore.
You say that there was some use of this breakthrough genealogical advance of DNA advance used for the D'Angelo conviction. And you say that since 2018, it has been used, or since that time has been used to convict. So tell us more about your idea about how the Zodiac may be linked to D'Angelo overall through this forensic technology.
Well, like I said, with the Zodiac, there's really not anything that I'm aware of, and I'm sure that there are people who have studied these cases for 20, 30, 40 years who may know of some sort of DNA or something that could be tested for the Zodiac. Personally, I don't. I don't know of that, because the criminalist that I listen to said that there really isn't any usable DNA. They don't see that there will be any. People talk about a mustache hair that was supposedly stuck underneath the stamp and things like that, and you never hear of anything being tested. Now it's 2021. Everybody's silent. The FBI will say, no, it's not him, but they don't tell you who they think it is. I've talked to other jurisdictions who say, well, you're not the only one who's thought this. And of course, you know, anybody who is from California knows what went on has to have thought, and they said it in the 1970s in the newspaper, maybe it's Zodiac who did this, but they just didn't seem to pursue it. And didn't come to resolve on so many cases. There's so many cold cases, I can't even begin to tell you.
Right. So if there isn't any DNA from Zodiac, then how do you expect anybody to check what you've done? I mean, you've done, this is an exhaustive investigation that you've done, but what do you expect from this? Expect people
what
to do what with
they
this
can
information?
See, well, what they can see from it is the patterns. The circumstantial evidence is there. The same, you know, types of attacks and what occurred. We can compare it and completely compare it to what D'Angelo did. We can track him and see where he was, when he was someplace, that he was available. And that's the other thing. You see that he was available. You can track him and see where he was and what he could have done. There's even one disappearance and murder and a rape all on the same night in September, the September attack. And we can see that there's an attack in, I believe it was Stockton, and he raped somebody, and then he drives up the road a couple hours, actually wasn't even that far, it was probably an hour and a half, and then somebody's abducted and murdered. So it's not unusual for something like that to happen. He did that, as a serial rapist. He would attack somebody, and then a few hours later attack somebody else. One wasn't enough for that night. And so there's so many things that are circumstantial that can be seen. That, you know, you can see that he was available. You can track where he was when he was doing something, what area he was in. You can see it. And law enforcement can see it. They know it. They have to have him on their suspect list for the Zodiac. They have to. And some of them that I've talked to do. So it's just that nothing is forthcoming.
Do you,
a lot of people don't
do
want
you,
to. this.
Why is that?
I just think that they don't want the negative attention. It's huge. I mean, can you imagine leaving a guy out there to kill five people a year or more for 50 years?
Yeah.
I mean, why would you want to say, oh, gee, he was a previous police officer and he killed all these people and he got away with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's enough right now, the shame that's been brought to the profession from him as it is. And he wouldn't be the first serial killer that ended up being a former police officer. And putting this incredible investigation and an analysis together, do you expect that some police haven't put everything together like you have and have the ability to put things together so it's readable like yourself? And do you expect some police to take a look at what you've done?
And yes, I do expect them to take a look at what I've done. Definitely. They're all going to get a copy of this. But, matter of fact, I have an appointment with one tomorrow in person to deliver it. But what I expect is that they will be able to see it if they haven't already. But one of the problems is that the time involved. I'm able to investigate 24/7 if I want to. They don't have the resources, they don't have the manpower, the woman power, whatever, to be able to, investigate in depth like this. I mean, when you sit for hours and hours and hours and look at what happened, they don't have the luxury of that typically. I know that there's a couple of private investigators out there that do this. And I think that eventually the story will be told and it will be connected. And there are people that know parts of the story, but they don't know the whole story. And so I'm trying to make this cohesive and understood. And hopefully that's what I've done.
I think you really have. I want to thank you so much, Anne, for coming on and talking about your new book, a very explosive book, Serial Slaughter, Zodiac Killer. Thank you so much, Anne. Is there, for people that might want to take a look at this work, do you have a Facebook page, website, anything where people might find out more about this?
Yes, there's a WordPress site, there's a Facebook page, there's Twitter, it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And it was interesting the first day of publish that I had it listed for free and quite a few people downloaded it. So hopefully they have an opinion about it. And that's really what this is about. It's sort of like getting the word out and saying, hey, what do you think? What do you think about what's been presented here? And what will we do about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Serial Slaughter.
As always.
Killer. Thank you.
Yes,
good night.
Pleasure. Thanks. Bye-bye.